Hello and welcome to Sci-Fi.
Sci-Fi?
Sci-Fi.
Yes, welcome to Sci-Fi, Sci-Fi, Sci-Fi. We are this week reviewing The Midwich Cuckoos by John Wyndham. Also, John Wyndham Parks, Lucas Bain, and Harris. Anyway, who chose this one?
That would be
Kevin,
myself.
Could you give us a reading from the back of the book, please?
Yes. I find this to be a bit spoilery, but hey, that's what I found.
Yes, it's from 1957.
If you haven't read it by now, then probably you weren't born then anyway.
I've never read it before this. In fact, I just listened to it.
It counts enough. In the sleepy English village of Midwich, a mysterious silver object appears and all the inhabitants fall unconscious. A day later, the object is gone and everyone awakens unharmed, except that all the women in the village are discovered to be pregnant. The resultant children of Midwich do not belong to their parents. All are blonde, all are golden-eyed. They grow up too fast and their minds exhibit frightening abilities that give them control over others and brings them into conflict with the villagers just as a chilling realization dawns on the world outside. The Midwich Cuckoos is the classic tale of aliens in our midst, exploring how we respond when confronted by those who are innately superior to us in every conceivable way.
Okay. Just saying it doesn't make it true.
All right. Barry, what did you think of this?
You know, I guess it's a classic and it was all right.
Great.
It's kind of a slow, long burn, I guess.
Yes.
Although not that long.
Or that Bernie. Okay, Kevin.
It burns when I...
Moving on. Kevin.
I liked it. I guess I am a sucker for John Wyndham books, but it was not my favorite of his books, but I did enjoy it. I mean, I'll agree with Barry that it is a little bit, you know, slow and rolling along the country hills.
Long discussions about the potential decision-making possibilities that the children may have. And
yes. Yeah. I've never actually seen, I think, the entire movie, so I was not corrupted by that.
Well, good for you. You've remained pure in soul.
Yes.
I have sort of mixed feelings about this. On the one hand, saying it's a classic, well, you know, there's a lot of terrible books that are classics.
Yes.
Colony could be considered a classic. But
just because it's an old book doesn't mean it's a classic.
On the one hand, yeah, it's a really good sort of exemplar of its type. It's not exactly the classic cozy catastrophe, which is the cozy catastrophe is a term for a particular kind of book where disaster happens, but afterwards, you know, it sort of makes everybody better and everybody's actually happier afterwards.
The people that survive end up in an idyllic country farm living in the English countryside.
It's sort of a pastoral disaster, Cold War paranoia book.
Well, maybe it's a World War II thing. All the kids are blonde.
Well, it's 1957, so yeah, it's post-war.
Potential.
And yeah, I certainly think that there's a little bit of a resonance about the Übermensch.
Children.
Yeah, I think that he's combining a couple of different ideas of what the enemy is, because on one hand, we've got the blonde-haired, blue-eyed children from Nazi Germany, and then on the other hand, they're all sort of collective minds, and so it's the collectivism of the Soviet Union.
Yeah, I mean, I think Day of the Triffids, which he also wrote, is sort of the classic of that type.
Right. Or Alas, Babylon is sort of like the ultimate one where, you know, they had to go through a lot of problems, but, you know, he winds up actually better than, you know, his previous life in some ways. And, you know, disaster was there to sort of make you tougher.
Yes, as opposed to on the beach where they're like, oh, we're all going to die down here in Australia. Let's just like mess around for a year and then just kill ourselves. It's like, wow, people suck.
Yeah, well, anyway, yeah. So this is very, very, very English. It was actually written around the same time as Childhood's End. And it's sort of interesting that this and Childhood's End are sort of different takes on the same thing. But this is the review section, not the analysis section. So anyway, I say, you know what this is. You probably know every single twist and turn because it's been done to death in other ways. Read it if you are interested in pastoral disasters happening in small town English villages.
Oh, please, please. Could it just be here?
You say that for every disaster.
Well, and the movie, I think the 90s movie, The Village of the Damned, was set in California.
Mm-hmm.
Which I didn't see either.
Well, that's great. I'm
but it was the last
role. Really glad that you put that in there.
It was the last role.
Just jump into the middle of my review and say random facts. I mean, granted, that's what I do. But
yes.
Anyway, so overall, it's definitely got some dated moments to it. It was actually impressing me with how undated it was. And then there it takes a sudden zig to a different direction.
I didn't understand why people didn't have cell phones.
They don't need them. They've got linked minds.
Yes.
Oh, no, the other people.
Actually, maybe this thing is actually more prescient than I thought. Maybe it's just seeing the invention of the cell phone.
Right.
Implanted cell phones in people's heads now.
It's just like, oh, once one child knows it, it gets added on Wikipedia.
And then they all know it.
It's all on the internet or the child net.
The child net, the kinder net. But yes, anyway. The
kinder net. Wow.
Yeah. Terrifying.
So, yes, I think that it's past time for us to link our minds and head off to our discussion section for We Are Sci-Fi.
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 See you in the cornfield.
And welcome back to our discussion of The Midwich Cuckoos by John Wyndham. So, did anybody have any favorite scenes?
It's kind of like a stupid scene, but I kind of liked how, like, MacGyvery it was how they, at the very beginning of the book, when the whole town was asleep and there was that like 2 mile radius like sphere,
right?
Or I guess it was about a mile radius,
right? It made me think about just how many stories have been, oh, there's a small town and it's actually now been domed over somehow.
Yeah, and you're like, oh, he did it in 1957.
Did they do this in the Simpsons movie?
Yes, they did.
And so they had
also the dome.
They had
or under the dome.
At the Dome Depot, get all your dome needs.
They got the bird, and I forget, you know, the what kind was it again? The classic kind.
The parakeet or the canary?
Canary.
The
canary, yes. And the funny thing is, I thought it was funny, he's like, I get a canary or some other random one would work too, which I guess was similar in function. Yes.
Ladies and gentlemen, what my colleague is trying to say is that the army trying to figure out how big the barrier is. So we begin with the day out where everybody in town falls asleep at the same time.
Right. And so anybody that's coming, trying to come back in, they immediately pass out. And so they're trying to figure out the edge of where it's happening. So they get a bird cage on a pole and they basically put it across. The bird like falls off and falls asleep and they pull it out and immediately like hops up indignantly onto his perch like, rah! And so, and then they go up, there's the line, and they mark it, and then they move down 10 feet and keep doing it. And I thought that was like just bizarrely amusing how, you know, we don't need anything technological. We just have this bird.
I do kind of wish that Monty Python had done, you know, instead of Holy Grail, had done Midwich Cuckoos, because they could have really done a great job with it.
Yeah, it is pretty.
Well, I mean, birds are the classic way to do this sort of thing, right? I mean, A, they're cheap. You know, and B, it's, you know, it's an immediate effect that you can see.
Yeah, they borrowed it from.
They could have done the entire dead parrot sketch.
I could easily see John Cleese, like, you know, putting the pole in. It was asleep and he's like, burr. It's like, it's dead. He's like, no, it's not. Pulls it out. Like, see, it's fine. Especially if, like, you know, it was the pet shop goes across the dividing line. So every time he gives it to him, it falls over or not.
So the real question is like, did you have to actually stick your head past the barrier, or can you just put your hands through it and then that not be affected? Or
I don't think they went into that exact detail.
Maybe your hands fall asleep.
Yeah.
Oh, they're all tingly.
Yeah, exactly. Barry, did you have a favorite scene?
I think the sort of prolonged scene where when people try and leave towards the end of the book and they feel they just can't drive across the edge of town.
Right.
They're like, literally, like, they just put it into reverse and they feel better and they need to kind of back up, just beep. Beep. And
actually, yeah, it sort of amazes me in some ways how this entire book seems to have been made to be done as a fairly low budget movie.
I mean, that I think that was the only action scene in the entire book.
Well, and also,
by action, I mean they drove somewhere.
Well, they had like military planes and all sorts of things, but it was off screen.
I mean, yeah, there's the military stuff in the beginning, but all of the stuff with the children could basically be done by, and then you turn this way, you know. Telling right. The actor.
How about you, Steven? Did you have a favorite scene?
Well, I've got a rather creepy sort of one, which is...
Is it the one you made up in your mind?
No, that's you two. I'm actually just doing three different voices. But anyway...
I'm impressed.
So also, am I.
It's self-congratulatory, too.
Yes. there's one scene that just sort of stuck out at me where, since it's an English novel in the 1957, they can't say abortion. And so all of the women have fallen pregnant and they're all freaked out about it. And so they describe, you know, a tremendous number of falls down the stairs. And
oh, right. And well, I thought that was just because of they were saying what was, quote, reported of what happened. Not that they couldn't say abortion, but it's probably both of those things.
I think that was a convenient way of getting around right, that. Yeah. I first read this when I was a kid, I think, and I just did not understand what the hell was going on.
You're like, I don't know, a bunch of people fell over, they were sick or something.
They fell down the stairs and
Does getting pregnant lead to, like, you know, being clumsy?
Hot baths and, well, I don't understand. So, yeah, it was just this sort of dark humor thing going on where he's just explaining without ever saying these women tried to give themselves home abortions. I can't say that I liked it, but I thought it was definitely interesting.
Well, there's also the one scene where one of the ladies just, like, takes off, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then there's this 20-minute discussion about, you know, who's going to take up caring for this extra child and the having scientist. To impose upon
right.
all the other mothers. And
she's like, it's not mine. It's a xeno, you know, birth or whatever they called it. Like,
yes, xenogenesis.
Yes, the xenogenesis birth.
Yes, which, of course, is, you know, the band with, Phil Collins and Peter Gabriel. And
God.
And they produce alien music.
Right, exactly.
They all have
Tony Banks. Eyes. Tony Banks, there we go. Yes.
I could feel something in the night.
I can feel it calling in the air tonight.
Yes.
And it's a bunch of telepathic children. Oh, Lord.
Those were the original lyrics.
Yeah, they're all about the Midwich Cuckoos. Actually, there was an original Genesis song called The Attack of the Giant Hogweed, which was sort of a parody of the Triffids.
I think we we should make a Genesis cover band called Exogenesis, and it's not? All and they're all variants about the Midwich Cuckoo rewrites. Sort of like a Weird Al, like, combined with.
I'm not sure that that's the silliest idea we've come up with on this show.
But does it have a chance of making any money?
Totally.
Well,
with real Genesis fans have to collect all of the
it has the
all the covers
similar amount to this podcast. So anyway,
net negative
and then negative. So does the book hold up over time?
I'm gonna just jump out there and say probably not.
For me, I was really impressed for a really long time because the views on women, okay, they're, you know, it's very 50s-ish, but for the 50s, you know,
it was very advanced. I mean, there were some parts where I was like, you know, they're basically saying, we're gonna have to talk with, you know, have a talk with your wife and move out of town, you know, so you don't have to be stuck here. And I was like, oh, of course they're not discussing it with her or anything, like she might have an opinion about right. it.
Well, I mean, a lot of the discussions they have are, you know, they have like a very, you know, strong Puritan
yeah
view of things, right? It's like, well, you can't just come out and say you're pregnant,
but on the other hand, they did. But then right after, they had, like you said, there was that scientist and she's like, hey, it wasn't my kid, it was like some weird alien implant thing, and I'm like a career woman or something, I'm moving back to London,
and it sort of took her side on it.
I mean
she did say, she's like, look, I was assigned to the Grange, mm-hmm. right, and I wasn't here by choice, and therefore this isn't my problem. I basically gave birth to the child and now I'm out of here.
Right.
And I'm not paying for it.
Right. Exactly. And, you know, Gordon Zellaby, who's sort of the author's mouthpiece for all of these, you know, advanced philosophical views that yeah. this is sort of trying to subtly promote, since I think that this was, you know, he was trying to sneak in sort of middle class liberal views at the time. Yeah. And, you know, so for example, before these two are married, you know, Zellaby's daughter and her fiance, you know, it's announced that she's pregnant. Zellaby's just like, you know, I don't really care. I mean, that's, you know, we've got to be understanding about these things. And he's like, no, you don't understand. We didn't.
Yeah. I mean, there's a lot of discussion where it's like, they don't want to be indelicate, right?
Right.
And so it's like, they end up like sort of dancing around the subject a bit and, you know.
But at the same time, what I'm saying.
Versus right. now where it's just like, someone was kind of like, look,
versus
we didn't have sex.
Right.
Right. And I'm pregnant, so I'm not quite sure how this happened, but.
Right.
I'm sorry. I'm jumping back to that red book where the scene in the hospital. What happened? Oh, God.
Yes. So, yes, we can answer one of our old retired questions. Any uncomfortable sex scenes?
None there was a disturbing lack of them in this book. Yeah,
exactly. So, but anyway, I mean, you know, for a 1957 book, it was sort of impressing me by at least punching above its weight in terms of rights of women, because Zellaby seems to be like very pro, you know, equality and so forth. There's a lot of stuff going on.
Well, I think a lot of the views that he has in the book are very, he's very, just very pragmatic about it. Like it's exactly. a science experiment.
Right.
Right. And actually the funny thing was, you know, cause they go into the whole thing where, especially in England, where he's like, well, we're not going to do what needs to be done because, you know, that would be improper.
Right.
That
wouldn't
it's like, well, in Russia, of course, they immediately like destroyed the entire town because, you know, that whatever.
Yeah. I mean, that was like my first reaction when I found, you know, when you get to the about an hour into the book and you're like, you know, all the women have become pregnant and it's pretty clear something weird has happened.
Right.
It's like today it's like, yeah, we would have just dropped a nuke on the town and be done with it.
Yeah. At the very least, they would have, you know, done a little bit more than spread rumors that this is a backwards town and you shouldn't visit it. Right. I mean, basically, yeah, the British way seemed to be through whispers and, you know, taking advantage of people's delicateness.
Right. It's like we already thought that town sucked. So
I mean, at a minimum, we would have just, you know, built a giant wall around the town and
exactly.
or, like, as we said earlier, domed it.
Right. Or carted everybody off or something.
Or put them all into...
Yeah, Area 51.
No, the real secret place is Area 52.
Yeah, but I'm not allowed to talk about that one.
Oh, sorry, were my lips moving?
No.
Sound
can,
coming
I
out
can
of my
actually in my tell. Head, though.
But so anyway, but, you know, for 1957, it was sort of impressing me by how advanced it was. And then suddenly he gets to this part where he's talking about race. And he's saying, oh, well, you know, I don't really believe in that evolution. This is Zellaby, the most sort of philosophically advanced person in the book, suddenly is going on in this rant about, you know, well, obviously the races can't be that closely related because we haven't found these missing links. And, you know, there's just so much difference between us and the Mongloids.
Well, yeah, that's like the way they refer to, like, some of the, you know, like, the yellow people and the brown people. And I'm like, I felt a little uncomfortable. I'm like,
it startled me because, you know, it had lulled me into this sort of false sense of security that, oh, well, he's really pragmatic.
This wasn't the safe book you were expecting, Stephen.
No, nothing is.
Other than that, I liked it.
Aside from that, Mrs. Lincoln, how was the play?
How dare your fictional character have an opinion on something that I don't agree with?
I mean, yeah, 1957, he was probably doing pretty well, but it was the advancedness of the rest of it that made that hit me over the head
was
by
it
surprise.
Incongruous?
I will say that I guessed about 5 or 10 minutes before, you know, the ending that, oh, I see what's happening here, you know, before it actually happens. Not that it was that difficult, probably, to guess what was going to happen at the very end.
Yeah. Was it ever sort of intimated that Zellaby had explosives before? Did we ever set up why he had a bomb?
No.
Okay, so
he's a British guy. Was he ever in the army? I forget.
I don't remember.
I think there was really anything that was stated that would make us think that this was going to be the ending. I mean, there had to be an ending of some sort.
No, right? Not necessarily. It just could continue.
Well, I mean, did he maybe talk and get something from, you know, Mr. Bernard Westcott or whatever, and, you know, the secret army guy? Or...
Right. My point just being that it did come a little bit out of nowhere that Zellaby blew all the children up. But I thought that was actually a rather good ending, although I was unclear as to whether the children could read normal human minds or not. I got the impression that they couldn't.
They have, what if we have abnormal human minds?
I didn't get that impression. I think they just talked with each other.
Right.
Maybe the army guys all had, you know, immunity to being having their mind read because they all wore little helmets like Magneto.
That's definitely what the subtext was of this book.
Well, I mean,
yeah, I mean, when they went on and on about how heavy all the equipment was and how he had all these things, I'm like, okay, he's bringing bombs with him or something. Like,
sure.
Also, he was talking about the, you know, they all like this candy. Make sure you got it. And I'm like, well, maybe he's going to bring them poison candy or something.
Hey, kids, at the count of three, everybody eat your candy.
I mean, he was the guy early on who basically said, this is what we need to do, but we're not going to do it.
I mean, you just need, like, you know, 82 separate snipers, right?
Well, yeah, they did kind of say, oh, well, you know, of course when the children were kind of saying, you're screwed because we're going to take over the earth because we're, you know, far beyond all you pathetic humans.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, they kind of were like, well, couldn't we just be friends? And they're like, yeah, it's not going to happen. Like,
I thought in like a couple of generations, you were just going to bring us advanced technology. Oh, wait, wrong book.
Yes.
So yeah, it was a reasonable ending. It wasn't just a, and then they all decided to be nice and they went into space or something, you know, some other random hippie ending or something. Like,
oh, all the children are going to take them into space and then space all the humans, right?
Yes.
It's all part of the master plan. Mm-hmm.
But Stephen can answer our tea question.
Yes. Was there tea? Never actually described, but everybody was going back to somewhere for tea, or, you know, tea was sort of omnipresent, but never actually there.
As is so in England.
Yes, exactly.
Or at least my vision of it.
Yeah, tea was always sort of in the next room and was usually actually describing sort of the midday meal.
Not tea time?
Same thing.
That too. Tea was just always happening.
What time is tea time?
Whenever I get somewhere.
I see. Will you explicitly? Okay.
What?
I think he was asking, is it 4 o'clock or something? But
usually, yes.
It's 4 o'clock somewhere.
Wow.
It's just like, don't mind if I do.
Long Island tea is not what they always have.
All right. So, okay. Next usual question. Which character would you want to be, and which character would you be?
Or would you belong to the children's group?
To be or not to be.
Yes, exactly.
That is
as for me,
Midwich Cuckoo.
Right. With some major exceptions, we have Gordon Zellaby, this guy who just talks about intellectual gibberish all the time, and nobody can understand if he's making any sense or not.
Was his name Steven in the book?
So aside from that one digression that he gave about the races, I would probably be Gordon Zellaby. As for who I would want to be, I wouldn't mind being him. It might be good to be the children, aside from that little ending bit. If the children were to be done properly, they would be more deceptive.
Right. It'd be a little more discreet until it was too late.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, they did come up with a pretty good plan for, we want multiple helicopters to get out of here so that you can't just blow up one helicopter and get most of us. It seems like they had thought it through. They just didn't anticipate the big bomb.
Right. I was unclear as to whether the children could reproduce by themselves or not.
Yeah, I guess we didn't ever find out where the giant silver egg came from or whatever it was.
Right. And I wasn't entirely sure why the male children and the female children were separate entities. Maybe they just thought it would be too creepy if
they were one.
If boys and girls could actually link minds.
Yeah, exactly.
That's a little too liberal, my friend.
All right.
So I think I'd want to be the big silver egg that, put everybody to sleep then.
Oh, that's really what I thought you were going to say.
I actually had just made that up. I could not decide up until this very moment.
I don't know. I think you would be the hive mind.
I mean, yes. The problem is, aside from Zellaby, everybody in this book is basically idiots.
Yeah, I don't know. Well, I did think it was funny. I probably would end up being, Gordon or, Zellaby or the main character who sort of like, he was there to provide the plot, but he didn't really do much other than like watch. And then like
what do you say?
Well, I accomplished a lot. Yeah, I mean,
this book is about 95%, Gordon, right?
Apparently in the movies, Gordon is just the main character, which would have been a far smarter approach to the book.
So wait, who did Christopher Reeves play then?
I don't know.
Yes, the hive mind comes out.
Yes, the
dum, dum, dum.
Well,
see actually, if we can figure out how we can get the barley sugar.
It was done as a radio play in 1982 and 2003.
I'm glad that we know that now.
Yes, Bill Nye played Richard Gator. Okay.
Bill Nye, the science guy?
No, Nike.
Oh.
Yeah, you find out very.
And Mark.
Quickly. Apparently there was a sequel to the 1960 Village of the Damned, a sequel called Children of the Damned followed, so maybe they didn't kill them at the end.
So Christopher Reeve plays Dr. Alan Chaffee.
Okay.
So that would probably be Dr. Gordon Zellaby.
I would imagine.
And Kirstie Alley plays Dr. Susan Verner. I had no idea that Kirstie Alley was in the Village of the Damned.
Mm-hmm. Well, or there was a doctor character. Maybe that's, I don't remember the name of the character though. So
Dr. Alan Chaffee.
Yes, but yes, that's why Kirstie Alley is a Scientologist now.
Because of Village of the Damned.
Yes.
It is
Holy
true.
Crap. Did you know Mark Hamill was in Village of the Damned?
Yes. No.
In the
maybe.
In the later one or the early one?
The 1995 version.
He was in that one. He was like two or something.
He plays the church guy, Reverend George, who does not seem to be in the book much.
There was a reverend in the book, but he was...
In the early part of the book, he was more of a... talking about, well, what are we going to do with all these pregnant women and make sure that... I think he was definitely concerned with like all the unmarried women not killing themselves seemed to be kind of half of it.
And, you know, you could tell that this was an English village because he wasn't really worried about the theology of it at all. He's just like, oh, whatever. Let's keep them from killing themselves. I think that's what I'm supposed to be doing. Yes. Do we want to talk a little bit about why it's called the Midwich Cuckoos? They did go a little bit into it.
I always thought because they were crazy.
Thank you. Cray cray, sir. Cray cray.
That is the proper term these days.
Yes.
They do talk a little bit about it in the book, but cuckoos are what they call obligate brood parasites, which means... that they...
I think you would be an obligate brood parasite.
You'd be an obligate brood parasite.
No, you.
No, you.
We're all voices in your head. It's what you said, so it's you.
I'm not entirely sure who you're insulting, but you're succeeding.
It's my only metric.
Oh, God.
So basically that means that cuckoos lay their eggs in other birds' nests. And then, just like the cuckoos in this book, they're designed to hatch earlier than the normal birds.
An accelerated maturation cycle?
Yes.
Like the Borg?
Exactly like the Borg. Well, actually, this is all like the Borg.
Yes.
Yes. So there are some species of cuckoos that, like, the chicks immediately, and hopefully without really knowing what they're doing, they just like, oh, there's another egg. Doesn't just look like a cuckoo
egg.
Push
that out.
Let's push that out of the nest. Oh, there's another chick. Let's kill that one.
Yeah, and then the mother is like forced to basically like raise all of these.
Right. Well, because there are certain like markers that the birds that are the hosts to these guys use to identify a baby bird. And the cuckoos have developed these like hugely. And so it's kind of like, you know, going into a Sanrio store or something like that. It's just like, oh, I've got to feed this one more because it's even cuter than one of my own children would be.
I think we have to blame Richard Dawkins for all of this behavior.
Well, it's actually, you can blame it for this entire recitation.
If he didn't talk about it, then this wouldn't be happening. That's how science works, right?
It's like those, what is it from the...
goes out into the forest. He's reading the birds to God delusion. And that is why you are all mindless monsters.
It's like in the early 2000s when the Tamagotchis first came out, right? And like, you know, children were playing with them all the time and like actually forgetting about their real pets.
Oh, right. You know, but this always makes me think about, you know, how hard is it to convince people that they're talking to other people?
Not very hard.
It's really not that hard. When you really think about it, I mean, chatbots are routinely capable of fooling people and, you know, spam, which is essentially the same thing.
Tell me more about your mother.
I'll tell you about my mother.
Spam.
I always fail those stupid VoIP comp tests.
But anyway.
It's not so stupid if you failed it.
So, yeah, it is a sort of interesting analogy that they say the Midwich cuckoos.
Well, it is in Midwich.
Yes.
There is this cuckoo phenomenon.
Guess it's a
good was title. A silver egg.
Oh, God, I didn't even think about that.
Jesus,
I can't decide if that's fantastic or terrible.
I don't understand.
One thing that actually I thought was hilarious was the very Britishness of the fact that the entire town gets knocked out. They wake up and they just sort of brush it off. And they're just like, oh,
had some tea and moved on.
With yeah. They're just like, nobody mentions anything. It's like, oh, back to normal.
As opposed to like maybe a small American town where everybody like runs around and like shoots everything.
I mean, right. I mean, basically the only thing that happened is they said there were a couple cases of like domestic violence where the husband, like, his wife was home and like the mailman passed out in the front lawn and he's like, obviously something happened there. And they're like, no, he just passed out there delivering the mail. And he's like, well, we'll see about that. And he like, you know, beat the crap out of him or something.
But there was one person who was just like, there was no satisfactory explanation as to why he was so near their house. Yet another sort of carefully discursive way of hinting at something.
Yeah, but it was just funny that, you know, if they all didn't magically get pregnant, it would just would have been like, oh, nothing happened.
Yep, the day out.
So I'm wondering if today, if like this movie were to be made again, what would be different? All the men would be pregnant? I mean...
cell phones.
Yeah, so it would definitely be cell phones if this film was remade today.
I'm not sure how much that would help since it was a small village and, you know, during the day out, everybody was asleep.
Right.
The internet would be ablaze.
I think that there would probably be a huge conspiracy theory subplot about how the government has known about this the whole time or something like that.
The chemtrails got me pregnant.
God. Well, I guess I know what your autobiography title is going to be.
Barry's fanfic. No, I think it'll be, what was it called? Obligate.
Obligate Brood Parasites would be the real title.
Or that should be the name of our band.
Yeah, that's true. That's not bad.
Obligate Brood Parasite. Okay,
well, remind me, that goes on the band name list.
It's not OPP, it's OBP.
You down with OBP? Well, you don't actually know me because I was born from Xeno something or other.
Wow. It's our first hit single already recorded in real time.
I mean, between J.E.D.D. Mason and Star Wars and this, I don't understand why we don't have a music channel as well. J.E.D.D. Mason.
Until we are all destroyed by a well-meaning Englishman.
I think it's tea and crumpets.
I think it's time for us to go because we are sci-fi.
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 Ka-choo.
Choo-choo-ka-choo.